Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Before the break, we heard auto contributor Mark Savage's annual Zoomy Awards. Food for thought as you think about whether a new car might be in your future.
But regardless of whether you're thinking about a new car, you're probably wanting to make sure you have a tire gauge after you hear from Walt Brinker. Since Brinker's retirement from a military career, he's developed an active hobby, roadside assists.
Brinker, who lives in North Carolina, estimates he's helped more than 2,000 stranded motorists for free. That hobby has spawned a book called Roadside Survival, and when Walt Brinker reached out to us, it seemed like an ideal topic for anyone planning to do a little driving. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mitch. It's great to be here.
I want to start with a point you make fairly early on in this book, and that is there are two types of people in the world, those who have been stranded on the road because of car trouble and people who will be. Do you think we should view problems as an inevitability?
Well, I believe that you can prevent a lot of bad things from happening to you. I believe that you make almost all of your own luck, good or bad. About 5% is fate, and the other 95% you can influence. But I really believe that there are two kinds of drivers, those who have experienced a disabled vehicle and will again, and those who will for the first time. It's not a matter of whether, it's a matter of when you're going to do it, because there's so many variables out there that can come along and ruin your day. And the trick is to be able to prevent the majority of them by doing common sense things up front as a preparation, and then to be prepared to contend with the circumstance that finds you disabled, to prevent yourself from being stranded. Stranded means you can't help yourself. You're just out there.
Right. And the idea here is that you can greatly reduce your risk of being stranded by following
exactly.
these preventive steps.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and so let's talk about some of the issues that you coach people through and how they might be prevented as well. You write that tire issues constitute really the vast majority of the problems you encounter.
I would say, having done this a lot now, some 2,000 free-of-charge roadside assists I've done as a hobby, I would say easily three-quarters of the people I stop for and I'm able to assist have tire-related issues. They've had a flat tire, the tread has come off. The tire is just flat, and they can prevent this so many ways. The most fundamental thing to prevent yourself from breaking down for all reasons is to take care of your tires on your car, the ones that are the four tires on the ground, or maybe six tires if you have dualies in the back, or if you have a trailer to make sure those tires are in good shape, or a camper, same thing.
Well, and so when you say take care of, what are the kinds of things that you should be checking
I'm talking about, first off, buying new tires, good tires in the first place. Don't buy used tires because you're buying someone's time bomb with a set of used tires, generally. When you get a set of new tires, normally you can take the option of getting a quote-unquote free replacement for a damaged tire. I always take that option. Pays a little bit more up front, but I have found that almost every time I bought a set of four tires, before that set of tires wore out, one of them got damaged by hitting a pothole, by hitting a curb or something, some reason that it got destroyed or could not be repaired, such as a damage to the sidewall. They can repair a lot of damages, a lot of holes in the tread, but if the sidewall gets cut or gets punctured by the nail or some debris in the highway, they're not safe to repair, and so they cannot be repaired. Develop a habit of, every time you get in your car, just look at your tires, see if they're low, obviously. You can't always tell if a tire is low with low-profile tires, so about once a month I advocate using a tire pressure gauge on the tires just to check them. Certainly before you go on a long trip, check the tires for pressure.
One of the issues that we encounter, especially in a cold climate like Wisconsin, is changing tire pressure depending on the temperature. What are the rules of thumb that you write about for understanding how our tire pressure is impacted by swings of 5 or 10 degrees in air pressure, or in temperature rather?
Well, the rule of thumb for that, and this is when tires are cold now, which is when they ought to be checked, is for every fluctuation of 10 degrees Fahrenheit, up or down, the PSI in the tire will change. The warmer the temperature, the higher the PSI. The lower the temperature, the lower the PSI. So if the temperature goes from 80 degrees Fahrenheit to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, that's a loss of 30 degrees Fahrenheit, which works out to a loss of about 3 pounds per square inch, due to nothing more than ambient temperature outside your tire.
Now, does this lead to an issue? You know, let's say that you go out in the morning and it's a really cold morning. It was 3 degrees in parts of the Milwaukee area this morning. Your tire pressure is low. You add air to the tire. Do you run into problems when the temperature warms up?
Well, you have to be reasonable about that. Warms up how much? It's not going to warm up that much, probably. if it's 3 degrees in the morning, it's probably not going to get much more higher than maybe 20 more degrees during the day. I would let that ride. But I would want to be sure that I was covered against underinflation, because underinflation is the root cause of an awful lot of tire problems. That's the root cause of a lot of blowouts, that's the final symptom before the blowout occurs, because in an underinflated state, the sidewall flexes too much and too extensively and finally wears out. And that's what causes most blowouts.
So you talk about tire pressure. What are the kinds of other things we ought to be looking at on a routine basis on our tires?
Just give your tires a look for any damage or any issues with the sidewalls. If you see any cuts in the sidewall, you're on borrowed time with a cut on the sidewall. Of course, if your tire's low, don't even think about going out and driving on it. If the tire's low, I always advocate keeping a tire pump, an air pump, a 12-volt compressor in your car so you can always tune up your tires to get, as a minimum, to the tire store to get the tire fixed. Now, some folks, when they have a flat tire, they'll just, if it's a nail, you can do it. You can fix a nail flat tire sometimes with a plug job by putting a plug in it. You can buy the plug kit at Walmart for $10 or so. However, the only thing with that is you've got to get access, and that only works on the tread, not on the sidewall, because you cannot repair a sidewall. But to make the plug solution work, you only have to get the tire off the car and then determine where the nail is if you can't see it readily. And I use a little squirt bottle full of soapy water for that. Of course, you have to put some air in the tire first, squirt some air in there with your pump, and then see where the air is escaping by looking for bubbles, for soap bubbles. And that is where the hole will be. Then you pull that nail or screw out with a pair of pliers and then work the plug and then repump it up, of course. But the problem I find that most of my customers are out on the interstate or on the highway, and by the time the tires have gone flat, the car has run with its rim directly on the sidewall until they can stop the car. And doing that tends to ruin the sidewall. It makes the tire unsafe to drive on. And so then it's time for the spare tire to come out.
And then you advocate for paying close attention to the spare tire, which is something that I imagine a lot of people aren't looking at until they need it.
Mitch, I'll tell you, 80%, fully 80% of the people that I encounter out there with a flat tire have a spare tire that is either flat or has far too little air in it to be useful. Most spare tires these days, many of them are anymore donuts. They require 60 PSI to be effective. They got to be really, really hard. And the sidewall can feel strong and can feel hard to the touch. And I ask the question, do you have air in that spare tire? And they'll thump it with the palm of their hand and say, yep, good to go. And I'll say, well, let's just put the gauge on it to see. Well, the gauge does not lie. When the gauge goes on there, 80% of the time the spare tire is too low to use. It's incredible.
Let me ask a dumb question, or potentially a dumb question. You can test the air pressure and potentially refill the spare tire with air without necessarily taking it out of its cradle, or do you have to take it out?
You can. It depends how the spare tire is stowed. Now, many times, though, the way it's stowed is the valve to put air pressure in is frequently stowed the wrong way, so you don't have access to it. If you can influence that, for sure, to flip it around and have the valve facing on a pickup truck or a van where it's under the back of the vehicle, have that part down so you can, if you have to, you can crawl under the vehicle and check it that way. Or if the spare tire is in your trunk, you can have the spare tire sitting there so that the valve is up and not down. In other words, in view and not hidden by being on the floor side.
Another point we ought to make is that you advocate making sure that if you do have a flat and you go to repair it, you do it in a safe location. And sometimes that means, out of necessity, having to drive on a flat tire until you can find a safe place to pull off, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're on a highway and there's no shoulder, like let's say you're on a bridge, and there's no shoulder on that bridge because the bridge has to be narrower. Yeah, I mean, you can't stop. To stop in the drive lane is foolish. That's very dangerous. And so you want to just keep on going and keep driving slowly with your blinkers on, staying in the right lane, of course. And the first time you find a place you can pull off safely and get out of the drive lane, do it. And then you can either have the car sit there and try and call for help to pull you out of there, or you can go into the self-help mode and save yourself.
If tires and tire issues represent the majority of the issues that you see in your time patrolling the roads around your where you live, you also write that that people simply running out of gas also represent a fairly substantial number, and that seems like one of those very easily preventable issues. But sometimes there are complicating factors, gas gauges that don't work, or other problems.
You're right, right on, Mitch. 25% of the people, I told you, three-quarters of the people I stopped for had tire issues. The other 25% are a combination of running out of gas, being locked out of your car, the car overheats, or the car just shuts off, generally because of an electrical issue, which is normally solved by tightening up the battery clamps. But yeah, out of gas is one of those things that's totally preventable if you're paying attention. Now, if your gas gauge is broken, then you need to realize that it's broken and not get it fixed. That's the first thing you should do. I mean, if you're putting that off for any reason, for hopefully a good reason, that you can do it soon. But meantime, you can have some kind of control over how far you have to go by every time you top off the car, push the trip odometer, and of course, hopefully you figured out or do this shortly after it goes flat. When the gauge doesn't work anymore, you know about how many gallons you have used when you top the car off, and you figure out how many you used at the next top off, and divide that by the number of miles, and figure out your miles per gallon. So that's a temporary solution until you get the gauge fixed. But there are many. I advocate carrying an empty 1 gallon can, one gallon gas can in your trunk. So if you do run out of gas, that you can either walk to a station and get more gas, or have a good Samaritan or even a highway patrolman come by and take that gas can, go to the station, and bring it back to you, and you can put it in your car. Now, there are other things that pop in once you put the gas back in your car. Typically, when you're on a highway and run out of gas, you're on the level. The car's level. When you pull onto a shoulder, often the shoulders slope to the right. So you pull off the shoulder, and the right tires then are lower than the left tires many times. When that happens, you add the gallon of gas to your tank, and the gallon that you add tends to pool in one corner of the gas tank and does not right away get to the intake, to the engine from the gas tank. And so what I do is I add the gallon of gas, tell them to crank it, and if it doesn't start, then what I've done is I've opened the right passenger door, I'll stand on the floorboard, and while the driver's turning the engine over, I'll jump up and down or cause the car to rock. I call that rock the car. And that causes the gasoline in the engine or in the gas tank to slosh around and find the intake, and then the engine starts. I've done that at least 30, 35 times, and every time the driver's just amazed, like it's pure magic, you know.
When did helping people with car trouble go from something you were capable of to something that you actively pursued as a hobby?
I think it all started back about 1980, Mitch, when I was I found a woman who had a stalled car, stalled engine, and her hood was up, and I gave her a jump with my jumper cables. It was Christmas season in 1980, and I remember noticing two things. One was how relieved she was at having gotten back on the road, and the second thing was how good it made me feel. It was like I don't do drugs, but it must have been like doing drugs, because I felt a rush of pleasure just having done that. And so I said, well, I've got to do more of this. That was so cool. So I began looking for cars that were in distress, and I discovered pretty quickly that there were many reasons besides needing a jump that people break down. And so over time, I'm talking 25 years now, I began to acquire knowledge about how to diagnose problems and as well as how to fix them. I'm not a mechanic, but all my stuff is low-tech, simple. And I began acquiring tools one at a time, and so now I've got a trunk full of goodies that permit me to overcome almost anything that does not require a mechanic.
Do you think that, on the whole, cars are more reliable than they once were? I mean, if I understand correctly, you are driving a vintage Honda Accord to do this.
For sure, cars today are better than they used to be. They're just every facet to today's cars is more reliable than the old cars. And I'm not saying the solutions are easier, but because there's so many more things that are automated and electronically controlled and are automatic in function, there are. Cars are better. The tires are much better than they used to be. My car, I have two Hondas that I use. I have two Honda Accords. One is an 89 Honda Accord that now has 507,000 miles on it. I bought it new. And that car is broken down three times on me, and I was able to bail myself out each time. I have another. I have an 07 Accord that has no idea how far it's going to get driven before it's over with. But I swap out to keep them both fresh. I'll swap out about every 3 weeks. I take the new car on longer trips just for reliability reasons. But I love them both, and they're both super cars. I want to say one thing, which is really kind of fundamental that folks ought to hear, is to listen to your car. When I say listen, that's listen with quote marks. It will, quote-unquote, tell you when it's about to fail. Now, your job is to listen to the car and pay attention to things like wheel vibration, mushy handling, or pulling to one side, all of which indicate a low tire. Weak engine starts, dim lights, and chirping of the gauges and stuff when you put the key in the ignition and try and start it, or weak headlights. That's an indication that your battery is about to go, or you have a weak connection between the battery and its clamps. Or the temperature gauge reads hot, or you have steam coming out of the exhaust pipe. That's white exhaust. That's not exhaust, that's steam, and that's a bad indicator. It indicates that it's a good indicator that you've got a bad problem, that you're getting coolant inside your engine, which is not too good. Or unusual noises from wheels, brakes, engine, transmission, or funny odors, or fluid leaks. These are things that your car is talking to you, and your car is saying, take me to the doctor before I fail on you, because I'm about to fail on you.
Well, these are all really important things to keep in mind, and Walt Brinker, I am really struck by what you get out of doing this, that it's not just personal satisfaction, but also the idea of making the world a better place.
Well, that's different strokes for different folks. Some people have different hobbies. Some folks go to the movies. Some play golf. I consider this to be like entertainment. You know, it cost me about $7 to get out on the highway and drive for about an hour. And I'll usually find on Interstate 95 near where I live, I can usually find one person each time I go out. So it's worth it.
Changing the world one tire at a time.
There it is.
All right. Walt Brinker, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch. Enjoyed it. And best of luck to you and your listeners.
Baby, break down. Go ahead, give it to me. Break down, honey, take me through the
Walt Brinker's book is called Roadside Survival, Low-Tech Solutions to Automobile Breakdowns. Brinker, who lives in North Carolina, performs free roadside assistance as a hobby. He's made over 2,000 assists. You'll find a link to more about the topics he talked about from WUWM.com. Too bad he doesn't make house calls here or road calls, I guess. Anyway, that's Monday's Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North, off to check my tire pressure.
And I'm Mitch Tyke, installing some new wipers. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock.